are listening to Beyond Migraine, a six-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland, brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The views, information or opinions expressed during the Beyond Migraine podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Migraine Association of Ireland or Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Please note, any comments posted are not being monitored by Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Reporting of suspected adverse reactions is important. It allows continued monitoring of the benefit-risk balance of the medicinal product. To ensure correct adverse event reporting, healthcare professionals and patients are encouraged to use their National Competent Authority reporting scheme. Or you can also report via tevapharm.com/contact us. This episode will be focusing on migraine attacks, with expert opinion and real-life experience of what can be a scary time for those living with migraine. Kira O'Rourke is a nurse who's been living with migraines for 20 years. Patrick Little is the CEO of the Migraine Association of Ireland, and Dr. Martin Rutledge is a consultant neurologist at the Migraine Clinic at Beaumont Hospital and the Hermitage Medical Clinic. So Martin, I suppose I wanted to go to you first. Can you talk us through what happens during a migraine attack?
Well, I suppose the first thing to say is that about 90% of all migraine patients will get episodic migraine. So that's a nicer place to be than chronic migraine. So in other words, they will have episodes and then periods of normality in between. So if somebody has episodic migraine, as I said, it's a much better situation, well, in one way, because you don't have headache and migraine symptoms on a regular basis. So if I was to think about most of the migraine patients that are in Ireland, probably three quarters of them will have three attacks or less per month. And if you have that situation, the one good thing is that you have three or less attacks per month. And the one bad thing is that it's very unpredictable. So your brain is where it's all happening. This is a neurological condition. And unfortunately, your brain doesn't really care what we think. It doesn't mind that you have three small children or that you have to go to work or that you've planned a birthday celebration next Saturday. Your brain will do what it wants to do. And that leaves you in the situation where it's very unpredictable what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and everybody wants to know what really causes migraine attacks. Is it stress-related in the main?
If you ask patients, so if you ask a couple of thousand patients, what are the most common five triggers for their migraine, stress is up there as number two. So hormones, because most of our patients are female, stress, not eating regularly, stormy weather, and sleep alteration would probably be the five most common triggers reported by patients. Now, the problem is to try and get some scientific evidence that stress is a trigger is very difficult because I think everybody's under stress all of the time and everywhere in the last year. So it's very hard to quantify stress and you can't measure it. So, and everybody deals with it differently. I think the one important thing is that a common denominator is that patients will say that stressful periods of time will result in a migraine. And I think you have to take that at face value.
And Kira, just to go to you now, can you tell us about your journey with migraines and how they started?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose I started to notice that I was having migraines, I would say, in my early 20s. I was in college and I was working part-time and I was fine and like a normal 20-year-old. And I started to have, like Martin said, episodic migraines. It would be a couple of times a month. I would definitely notice them more around hormonal times and things like that. But they were easily managed, or I was able to have some sort of normality in my life. As I went on kind of into my 30s and that, I started to have children. And what I noticed is actually when I was pregnant and when I was breastfeeding is that I didn't have any migraines at all. My migraines went away. And this was fantastic. If I could have had 100 children, I would have had them. Because I didn't have any migraines. And I'd say my youngest child is 5 now. So I'd say about 4 years ago, my headaches came back and they came back with a bang in terms of no longer were they episodic, they were chronic. And I was having more days of headaches and migraines in the month than non-days. And there was times where it could be 20 to 25 days of the month where I would have symptoms of migraine. I definitely think things like stress and skipping meals, like you both said, were contributing to those. And you can imagine yourself with three young children and working full time, you're going to have lots of stress in your life. And there is lots of times where you're not able to manage your life or stay indoors or keep well rested and all of those things that you should do. So it got to a point where I wasn't able to manage and I wasn't feeling as well as I should do. And I suppose that's when you go and you try and get some treatment and help for the condition, which is what I did.
And I suppose for some of us, if you work in an office or you work for yourself, an unexpected migraine, you can, you know, sit down and you can take a break or you can possibly go home, but you're a nurse in a busy hospital, so it's not always an option for you. So how do you deal with it?
Absolutely, it's not always an option. I suppose I will say that I'm very, very lucky that I've got a great employer. They understand migraine. And I think that is so important. I think people that don't fully understand it, and like you said earlier, say it's just a headache or it'll go away, or everybody has these, you know, don't fully understand the full implications. I suppose for myself, I would have symptoms like the really severe headache, but also nausea and vomiting. I would have photophobia, or sensitivity to light. I wouldn't feel so well. And I'd get to the point where I need to be in a darkened room. So obviously when things like that happen and the migraine gets to that point, I'm not able to work. So there are times where I do need to go home or I need to ring in sick. You know, it does happen. It definitely happens even as a nurse. But I try, I suppose, to be prepared for migraines at all time. And I suppose I'm always the person that has the full pouch of medication in my bag wherever I go. I'd bring snacks with me. I'd be able to take regular breaks if I need to at work. And I suppose the girls at work are used to me now kind of saying, I'm going to take 10 minutes. I've got to go and sit down. So it's just being, I suppose, brave enough to be able to put your hand up and say, I need a break. I need to take some time for myself. It's important. And you learn that over time. And it is something that you kind of trial and error a little bit. But it's something that you have to be prepared for migraines, definitely.
And what you're talking about there is self-management, really. Just having the snacks in your bag, having your medication with you, that's a form of self-management. And Pat, I suppose that's something that the Migraine Association of Ireland would very much advocate, is that people learn about their condition and understand their condition and learn about managing their condition. And I suppose Ciara's story is not something you wouldn't have heard about over the years.
Absolutely. Very, very familiar. And in terms of preparation and learning, the Migraine Association, the biggest thing that we provide is a diary and encourage people to keep a diary. And I think Martin would be very happy when he gets people arriving at the clinic who've already begun to keep a diary, because we can often spot patterns that you hadn't actually even realized. I think just the question you're asking me about the self-management is so important, because migraine is such an individual condition, it's not always easy to treat. So it may take time, and during that time, still have to get on with your life. So there's a lot of things people can learn about how to manage the condition. And as Ciara was saying, was, you know, be prepared, number one, carry medications, try and keep to the same routine. And also, I think what you said last there, Ciara, about letting colleagues know is so important, you know, to educate your employers, even family and partners who can also contribute to your stress. And certainly, in a more general way, we would say it's very important for anyone who's working as a coach, for instance, with people, to have some concept and understanding of what migraine is and how it can present. Because often it presents for the first time with somebody while they're exercising. And we had an incident of a woman told me one day about her son out on a first yachting lesson on his own, Dunleary Bay, and got an attack and could hardly stay on board. So, you know, again, so important for people to learn and to know. And what, it's one of the things the Migraine Association does try and do is to educate the general public, but also health professionals and employers in particular.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say the incident of the guy out on the sea, because I have a teenage son and he gets attacks when he's out kayaking. It doesn't sound like a huge problem, but he's been on a few kind of school trips where he has avoided going out on sea. Is that something, Martin, that people do, like the reflection on the water or when they're on sea, that they can get an attack? Is that something you've heard before?
That's something that we come across very often. Obviously, if you're in situations where you're a little bit vulnerable, For example, if you're driving a car on the motorway and you start vomiting or you get an aura with your migraine, that's not ideal and people have to pull over. I think it's probably the same situation if you're doing sort of sports like this, where you're relying very much on keeping yourself above water, as not to make a joke, but it's not something. I don't think the light reflection, I think probably the light reflection and the light sensitivity is probably your brain already starting the migraine rather than the trigger. And a lot of people talk about light sensitivity and sensitivity to certain light frequencies. And we do come across it occasionally. I have some patients who have significant difficulty with different light frequencies. But I think probably in the first 24 hours before the headache starts, if you think about your brain, I think it becomes light sensitive at the start of a migraine rather than the other way around in most cases.
And are there any, I know some people have aura, but not everybody has aura. Are there any warning signs for people in terms of, I know everybody is different, but some of the most common warning signs that people would see before a migraine attack? So I suppose if you're going to get an unexpected migraine attack, there might be warning signs there that could maybe highlight the fact that you've won on the way.
Yeah, that's a really, really important point. So by the time you have a headache in migraine, say you've gone 10 days with no migraine, by the time you've got a headache, the migraine had probably started 24 hours ago. So trying to get people to read the signals from their body is really something that we talk a lot about in the clinic now in people who have episodic migraine, perhaps twice a month or three times a month. And the most common symptoms that we would hear reported is, for example, let's say on Tuesday you come home from work, you're absolutely exhausted at 7 o'clock in the evening, you're yawning repeatedly, you're craving sweet foods, your neck is stiff, and you really need to go to bed because you're exhausted. And you go to bed at 9 o'clock and you wake up the next morning with a whopping headache. People think, oh, I was exhausted yesterday and therefore that's why I got the migraine. We believe that the biology of migraine starts in the parts of your brain that make you crave chocolate, that make you exhausted, and that make you yawn repeatedly. And therefore, the migraine in that person probably started 12 or 18 hours before they actually got the headache symptoms. So trying to, again, understand your brain and understand the biology behind it and trying to read the signals from your body is really, really helpful, especially in the episodic migraine patients.
I had a very interesting experience in terms of aura. I was at a charity nun run at Kilkenny Castle one day. So there was 3,000 people dressed up in black and white. And it was a really bright day. And I was down among them. And then when I came up to watch the start of the run, I suddenly started to feel like I was having a stroke. My vision completely went. And it was only later on that it dawned on me that previously a black and white pattern had triggered the same reaction to me. So when I realized that, the next time it happened, I could associate, I went, there was a storm at the sea where I stayed during the week. And the waves with the black and white, the darkness and the lightness, when I came back to watch a football match, my sight just went for 20 minutes. So straight away, I realized that that was one of my triggers. So it does happen. But as Martin was saying, it's getting people to understand that it probably is the migraine started already.
Yeah, it can be hard to recognize that when you're in the middle of it. I don't know, Ciara, if that speaks to you. I know that Patty used to say at events, and I've experienced this myself, you might say to people, do you feel different? Do you get cranky? And they go, oh, no, I don't. And their husband or wife is behind them and saying, oh, yeah, they do actually. Yeah, no, they do. So that it's really important, Ciara, isn't it, to have that? It's almost like your migraine champions around you, people that recognize it. Do you have that in work and in your family as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I would have always said, I don't get aura. I would never know when they're going to happen. They can happen whenever. And I was actually at a talk with Martin and he was saying about the yawning. And I had never figured that out in my life before. And I was like, I yawn all the time before I have a migraine. And then I went and I said it to him. He was like, absolutely, Ciara, that's a little telltale sign for you. So, you know, it is so important to have people on your side. Work is great, but I have to say my husband is fantastic and I am so, so lucky to have him by my side. There are times where I get home from work and I kind of put this goal for myself to get through the day, because once I get home, I've got to go and rest, or I've got to go and look after myself. And he does take the lead a lot of times at home. And to have that support and to have people by you, I think is so, so important. And I think it's even more important now when we're going through COVID, when actually lots of people aren't anywhere near us. You can't have your families there, or your parents or your friends or whatever it is. So having someone that you're able to count on or you're able to go to is just really, really important.
And so in the middle of a pandemic and as a nurse in Beaumont Hospital, how are you managing your migraines at the moment?
It's difficult. It's very tough. I think this time last year was probably my toughest time, because it was the whole uncertainty. And I think I had a lot of stress. And I think we were seeing numbers coming from other countries, and we had videos from Italy, and we were in the hospital going, what are we facing into? We were all kind of redeployed into different areas of working and working longer shifts and longer hours to try and help our colleagues, you know, who were out sick. So it was a really, really difficult time. So there was times where you couldn't go home when you didn't feel well. There was times where you just had to get on with it, for lack of a better word. So it was very, very difficult. I have to say there was lost weekends, and I kind of say that term because that's what I say to friends now, and that there was lost weekends where I would get home from work on a Friday evening and I probably wouldn't get out of bed till Monday morning, because I was so exhausted after what happened. It's got a little bit easier, and we've got to, again, learning how to channel the stress and deal with what's going on in the hospital. So I'd say those first couple of weeks were the most difficult.
And I read somewhere that you said that when, I suppose for some people that don't have migraine, after the shift, they may come home and spend, you know, a couple of hours with their children. But for you, that wasn't an option as part of your self-management. You knew that you had to go to bed.
Yeah. And I was so afraid of even touching the children when you get in, because you're after working, obviously, in an area with COVID patients. So I used to have my husband kind of make a kind of beeline where the kids couldn't touch me, because the minute you'd walk in the door, the three of them would come running for their hugs and cuddles, whereas I needed to get upstairs and get to the shower and go and wash myself and kind of take the day off myself. And then it would be at that stage, obviously, they could come up to me in my bedroom and we'd spend time there. But there was times where I wasn't fit to do more than just kind of have a cuddle in bed with them. And yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, very tough. And Martin, do you have any advice for people in terms of if they are faced with an unexpected migraine attack and they can't get home, what can they do about it? Is there any advice there?
Well, I suppose the first thing, if you're lucky enough to recognize, as we spoke about, the prodrome. So the prodrome and aura are slightly different things. The prodrome is probably the 6, 12, 18 hours before you actually get the headache. The aura phase is usually maybe 30 to 60 minutes and usually quite short. So if you're lucky enough to recognize the symptoms of the prodrome, you can treat early, and you can treat with a combination of products. So if you're lucky enough to do that, the problem is once the headache sets in, most people are bunched. Like they find it very difficult to effectively treat the migraine once the headache is set in. So I think preparation is what it's all about. Have your cocktail, as Kira said, in your bag. Keep a really detailed diary, as Pat said. Try and read your body's signals. And if you're episodic and you have two attacks per month, for example, treat early and treat hard. So it's a combination approach. There's not any one factor in any one patient. Keep a diary, read your body's signals, look out for the warning signs, have an acute cocktail ready, treat early, treat with combinations, and try and manage your lifestyle so that you don't get the unexpected migraines as much as possible. And I don't know how we do that. Exercise regularly, eat regularly, go to bed regularly. You can't change your stress levels and your hormone levels, but you can manage some of the other trigger factors.
Yeah, and I'm going to hit you with a few old wives' tales now, just in terms of remedies for, I'm sure you've heard them all before, Martin, but personally, myself, full fat Coke is something I will take. Any evidence behind that, or is that purely a placebo for me?
You know, there's a lot to be said for Coke, because in certain circumstances, I don't recommend it every day of the week, but in certain circumstances, the sugar levels is probably helpful, the dehydration, and probably combining, you know, the caffeine probably as well. We had a chat in the clinic yesterday about caffeine, and one of my neurology colleagues was saying, no, I advise all my patients not to have caffeine. I advise sort of an intermediary approach. In other words, moderation. So two or three coffees a day is important. If you don't have caffeine for 24 hours, you will get a migraine if you're a migrainer. If you withdraw caffeine, if you have too much caffeine, you'll get a migraine. So what you need is a little balance, and that's what's in Coke. You've got sugar, you've got fluid, you've got caffeine.
Yeah. And the other thing I've used, particularly with my children, is, you know, the feet in hot water and the ice pack on the back of the neck. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. I'm using badger hair is also recommended as well. No, I don't recommend the feet in hot water. And I don't, ice packs probably help people. I was talking to a cluster headache patient yesterday. It's obviously different from migraine, but he goes to the bathroom and he puts his head against the cold tiles in the bathroom. And actually some of my migraine sufferers will say they get comfort out of lying on the cold tiles in the bathroom. So in between the nausea and the vomiting into the toilet bowl, they're actually lying on the floor and making their way from the tiled floor to the toilet bowl and backwards and forwards. So I think probably the cold ice pack, and that's harmless. It's not going to do you any harm. So why not on?
Yeah. Pat, I just wanted to go to you. Just, we've kind of mentioned it here a little bit, is that with unexpected migraine attacks, you can be on the football pitch, or you can be at work. So how do people support people if they're suffering from a migraine attack? It's not rocket science, really, is it?
Yeah, but not that easy, I suppose, in terms of the level of pain or whatever someone's going through, or discomfort. I had an incident on an Aer Lingus flight just before the lockdown. I was going to Brussels, and this guy got in beside me, and I could see he was in trouble very, very early on. First of all, it was clear he'd booked two seats, and it transpired he was a businessman going to Brussels to give a lecture, but he had a very severe migraine, and straight away he asked me to pull the blinds down. He got all his medications out, but he suffered the whole way through. And afterwards, I spoke to the Aer Lingus staff and asked them, had they been given any training in terms of someone suffering a migraine on a flight? And they hadn't. Now, they dealt with it very well in terms of they went and got him liquids and a cold towel. They stayed with him. But he was obviously very experienced, and I spoke to him as I came into Brussels. I was leaving him while he was having the migraine. But he was as prepared as he could be, but he's still on a flight. Flights are one of the things that seem to, for some people, be one of the, I don't know whether it's the stress, change in routine, air pressure, whatever. It certainly seems to impact on some people. Another one I just remembered, I don't know whether you saw, there was a US reporter called Serene Branson who had an attack while reporting on the television, and it was a speech disturbance. Her speech completely went. And again, that's another one that would be recognizable, probably more so by people. We know someone very close to us who, I know her voice changes. She's on the phone and I hear her voice, and then I guarantee you, she told me the next day she had a very severe migraine the next day. So as Martin says, there are definite probably signs if you can recognize them.
Yeah. And if you're in the middle of an All-Ireland final or in the middle of that's very...
Yeah, there was a Cork player had to come off in an All-Ireland final when he got aura. And again, subsequently went on to be treated and didn't happen again, but it was not the place to be getting an aura for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can the Migraine Association, they also offer training to employers, don't they, as well?
Yeah, one of the things we do is because, even people can get 20 minutes out in the dark room or small adjustments to screens, to light, all those kinds of things. Also asking people to let their colleagues know, as Ciara was saying, so that they can call on somebody just to, can you step in here for 10 or 15 minutes? That relieves the whole stress. If people know they can do that and their colleagues are aware, they're not so stressed about it when it happens, and then are less likely to maybe for it to continue for longer. So really, I suppose what we try and do is get people as informed as possible, do the things that give you the best opportunity and chance. And things like sleeping regularly, taking exercise, maybe learning there. On our website, we have different techniques that we had set up last year when COVID kicked off. There was a huge increase in calls to some people very stressed. So we got into, doing breathing techniques, yoga, all that kind of stuff. So doing things that give you the best chance to try and manage. But definitely, we would encourage people to go and get a diagnosis and go and try and get the right treatment is very important.
Yeah. And Ciara, the actual getting the diagnosis was a big game changer for you, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. because I kind of, as a nurse, you kind of know I've got migraines, and you hear it all the time. People, everybody has a migraine, and everybody says it. But I wanted to know for sure. And there was a time that I was so convinced there was something else going on in my brain. And because I work in a hospital, I got a CT brain, I got an MRI brain, I got everything because I was convinced, because this couldn't be natural or normal. But actually going to my GP, having a chat, getting the referral to the neurologist, and going to see him in clinic and seeing Esther as well. Esther is the migraine clinical nurse specialist in Beaumont Hospital, and she's been a huge support and a help. There's a telephone line that she has, and to be honest, I text her regularly and I get advice regularly, and it's so, so important to know that you're not going mad and you're not going crazy and these things are real, and that it does affect other people. You're not alone as well, because I think sometimes when you're experiencing it and maybe you don't know so many people that have it too, it's difficult to think that what's really happening is real. So it was very important. It also was important to get on the right medication. What I'll say about that is not one size fits all. It's important to go and seek the right treatment and get the right help, because I think everybody has a bit of advice for you as well. And they'll say, you know, and especially you were saying about the old wives' tales and the treatments, you know, everybody has something to tell you, but actually it's different for everybody.
And Martin, the crucial role that your healthcare team has with you, which underpins everything, how can we improve that relationship?
I think the problem is, the biggest problem is that there's a vast number of migraineurs in Ireland, and you have 5 million people in terms of the population and probably close to 1 million people with migraine. So if you have close to 1 million people with migraine in the country and you have 5 headache centres in the country, then it doesn't work. So the main goal for us for the last perhaps 5 years has been to try and develop a relationship with general practice. So as Pat said, we're trying to generate a relationship with the ICGP, so the Irish College of General Practitioners. And in 2019, we put together, well, it was actually in 2018, a document to try and help the GPs. It's called a quick reference guide for migraine, and it's on the GP website. The problem is it's about 50 pages long. So we're trying to develop a relationship where we share the care of patients, and we look after patients in primary care and in the hospital setting, because we can't do it all ourselves in the hospital setting because there's too few of us and there's not enough specialist nurses. So the whole idea is to liaise with the pharmacists, the GPs, the practice nurses, and really develop this relationship and this referral pathway where we can talk to each other. Now, we're only in the infancy stages of that, and we've got some granting from Sláinte Care in the last 2 years to try and support that kind of project where we partner with primary care to try and support the patients and manage patients. And some GPs are excellent and some pharmacists are excellent, but we want to bring up the level of headache education in primary care is really our goal. And that's why we give lectures to GPs, we give lectures to pharmacists. We have this ICGP document, which is good for primary care, and we're working on another one at the moment. And I think that's probably the critical thing in a country like Ireland, where you just don't have enough neurologists and you don't have enough headache nurse specialists.
Yeah. And I just wanted to go back to the issue of stigma, because I think stigma is important when you look at something like an unexpected migraine. So looking at the Teva survey, 24% of people felt that they had to hide their migraines because of, you know, work or career related issues. And I suppose if you're hiding it, why would you feel that you have to hide it? So there is still somewhat of a stigma around it. Isn't there a patch that people think it is just a headache?
Absolutely. I mean, we've come across very senior ministers in government who have migraine and who don't want it known because they feel that it'll be perceived as a weakness and they're not up to their job. And that's very common for people to feel. And those surveys also indicate that people do actually suffer in terms of not getting promotion, in terms of how their colleagues view them. So the education part of it is, in terms of the general public, is so important, and particularly about employers being educated. And one of the things, there was a very good survey published recently about a company who developed migraine policies, had a pathway for people to be treated who had migraine, and was published that the level of migraine reduced completely in the workforce. in terms of people came forward, looked for help, got the right help they needed, and the outcomes was a win-win for everybody. So that's one of the things that we're going to try and focus on. It's one of the strategic aims of the Migrant Association in our strategic plan to tackle employers. And in this coming year, we had a big event last year on migrant in the workplace. And this year, we're going to try and push it even further because it is so important. People lose their jobs as well. And that leads to whole, you know, more stigmatization, more poverty even for some people. So it does impact. And one of the things Kier mentioned earlier about the isolation, that's a very common feeling. People feel, they often by the time they come to the Migrant Association, their lives have collapsed. You know, their relationships are in trouble. They've stopped doing any kind of social activity. They're in trouble at work. So it's getting that back and getting them to manage. And it is important then, very important, to educate the general public and employers as a way of tackling that stigma.
Yeah, we had Tony Cascarino on one of the other episodes in this series, and he was saying that he really hid his condition because of transfer issues, that, you know, if he was found to be suffering from migraine, it could actually affect his fee that would be paid for him if he was transferring, which is something you just don't think about. And he said there's a lot more of them out there that hide it purely for those reasons as well.
Yeah, and if you were trying to get promotion through a company, then you wouldn't want it known because you would feel that it would go against you.
Yeah. And I, Kira, you've had migraines for 20 years, unfortunately. Do you feel that there's a much better understanding of migraine from where you were 20 years ago? Maybe it's slightly different for you because you're in a healthcare setting, so maybe people have a better understanding than the general public. Do you find people generally helpful in understanding, or is there still a stigma there?
It's a difficult question because I think at work, I'm lucky and I've been in the same job for quite a while. So people know me now and they know, you know, when I get a migraine, and they almost see it in my eyes. There's a colleague I work with and she says, "I see your eyes, Kira, they're always glazing over," or "that's the start, I know." So I can't hide my migraines. It's there, it's for everybody to see, and they're aware of that. But I haven't always worked in places like that. And certainly, you know, even about job promotion and things like that, like Patrick was saying, the first thing, or one of the things they look at, is your leave and how much time you've had off on sick leave. And that is something that affects all people with migraines. And I know people with migraine that have had to give up their jobs or give up their careers because there's more days out than in. So I'd like to say that it's getting better, but I still come across, you know, it's just a headache. And I think the most common thing I hear is we all get headaches, Kira. None of us are immune to headaches. And if it was just a headache, that would be fine. And I suppose it's the important thing of podcasts like this or different blogs and promoting the awareness is that migraine is so much more than a headache, and it affects people in lots and lots of different ways. And just to be aware of that and to get that speech out, it's more than a headache and it's lots more. The nausea and vomiting, and I suppose I've seen that in the topic today, is the times you're not prepared for migraine. And I've certainly had that. There was a time where I was at a concert back in the good old days and I started to get a migraine and I had to go to the bathroom and I had to get sick and I had to vomit. And I came out of that bathroom and I never felt so ashamed, because here I was, this 40-year-old woman vomiting at a gig like a teenager, and people thought she is drunk, she's off her rocker, and I wasn't, and that's the truth of it. And you still get that shame around the kind of symptoms of migraine, of people not quite understanding. And I was trying to say, no, it's my migraine, I'm not feeling well, and it's like, yeah, right, pull the other one, Kira. So as much as I'd like to say things have progressed and everybody's so much more aware and enlightened, we still have a bit to go there, I think.
Yeah, and I suppose from my own experience as somebody that suffers from migraine, but I've also, having worked for the Migraine Association, I've been around at events with a lot of people who might have unexpected attacks of migraine. And the main thing you can do is to believe them. That actually releases the stress off them completely, that you're not interrogating them or asking them questions or saying, what did you drink? But to actually say, okay, you're having a migraine attack and let's believe you and let's let you go home for work, or let's let you lie down, and let's not pressurize you into attending that family event, that we understand that you have this condition. So for me, to just believe people, isn't it, Kira?
Absolutely. Completely. And there's times where it's like, oh, there she goes again. Or people would even say she's trying to get out of things now, or she's trying not to show up, and she's using migraine as a crutch or as a reason not to attend these things. So yeah, the belief will be really helpful. And when you think about what we've just spoken about earlier, about one of the triggers being stress, the stress of not being believed is huge. So it's just adding to the pressure that people are under. So no wonder people want to hide it. No wonder people want to blame other things, because if you feel already going into a situation you're not going to be believed, it's really, really difficult.
And Martin, you probably see that in the migraine clinic, because it's the first time people have come to an area where there's specialised care and specialised knowledge about their condition.
I suppose I'm the ultimate believer, because of all the medical conditions that you can get. So if you think about blood pressure, or you think about having ischemic heart disease or cancer or psoriasis or multiple sclerosis, migraine is the one condition where you have to believe the patient, because there's no signs. There's nothing on scans. There's nothing on investigations. There are no signs of the condition except that the patient is telling you. So we're sort of the ultimate believers. And our motto would be, we take everything at face value and we see what comes out in the wash. And sometimes after 10 or 15 consultations, you realize that there is an element of something else. But 90% of our patients, you listen to their stories over and over and over again. And it's stereotyped. It's like playing the same record. Now, either people are reading the same books or looking at the same Google sites, or they're all experiencing the same type of symptoms. And we are the ultimate believers in medicine. That's what I would say the migraine medical people are, because you have to take people at face value. And we do. And we very rarely, actually, I would say it's a really, really tiny minority of people who actually, it turns out that there's something else significant wrong with them. 95% plus will have migraine. And when you hear the symptoms over and over again, you get to be knowing that, oh, actually, this is, I've heard this many times before. And that's quite reassuring from a doctor's point of view, because within 10 minutes, you know what's wrong with the patient, you know, 19 times out of 20.
You've been listening to Beyond Migraine. I want to thank our guests today, Dr. Martin Rutledge, Ciara O'Rourke, and Patrick Little. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Beyond Migraine, a six-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland and brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland.